Goalie gummies get you so close to your goals, you can actually taste them. The trick? Simply start with bite-sized steps, like Goalie's apple cider vinegar gummies with added B vitamins for daily health, or Goalie ashwagandha gummies to help you relax, restore, and unwind. Mmm, tastes like wellness just got a whole lot better. And when goals taste this good, it's easy to achieve them. Goalie, taste your goals. Learn more at goalie.com today.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Dan Orlovsky going to stop by 20 minutes from now. So let's look at the four teams that lost over the weekend. I think the Jaguars are probably the easiest to dissect on where they go moving forward, because you like their coach, you like their quarterback. Travis Etienne showed he could be really good. And even though I don't love taking running backs in the first round, he's more than just a running back with what he could do catching the football as well. Christian Kirk was better than what people thought. Zay Jones turned out to be pretty damn solid. Evan Ingram had a really good year. The defense made a lot of plays. Like, I just look at Jacksonville. I think they need more seasoning. I think they need more experience. They should be able to win that division next year. I guess if you could make one improvement, maybe go get a more consistent, proven piece for Trevor Lawrence to throw the football. But with that being said, now he hasn't played in 2 years pretty much. A lot of people forget, Hickey, they did trade for Calvin Ridley. And we know Calvin Ridley, when he's on the field, is a number one wide receiver. Now, as you've seen, right, Deshaun Watson, who up until 2 years ago was considered to be a great player, they get the trade, you think he could just go right in and will be magnificent. I didn't think Deshaun Watson looked all that great when he came on back. So you do have to knock off some of the rust when you just aren't playing for 2 years. And we'll see if for the Browns if they could get that out of Deshaun Watson next year. And for Calvin Ridley, how long it takes him to get back to being acclimated into being an NFL player. But I think the Jags are set up in a really good position for the foreseeable future, where you don't have questions about the quarterback, you don't have questions about the coach, just about fine-tuning the rest of that roster.
Ryan, you make a good caveat with Calvin Ridley. It's basically been 2 years, so it's like if you are Trevor Lawrence, or if you are really actually Trent Baalke in the front office, you've got a guy like DeAndre Hopkins who's out there, you know, on the trade market this offseason. You cannot bank or say, oh, we're good on that because we have Calvin Ridley. You get both, but honestly.
You could say that, and maybe you're right. I'd be surprised if they do trade for DeAndre Hopkins. It would make a lot of sense, but I do think a lot of teams, if they traded for Calvin Ridley, are going to think that he could just go back to being that number one wide receiver. But I don't know how long it takes to knock off that rust, and I don't know if maybe missing 2 years makes him a one-and-a-half type of wide receiver. I would think after 4, 5, 6 games that Calvin, and having a whole offseason, I would think that Calvin really would be able to get back to number one wide receiver rather quickly, but I truly don't know the answer to that. It's just based off feel.
And, I mean, look, if you're the Jaguars, why don't you strike while the iron's hot? Coming off a good year, you know, you win a playoff game, let's get, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, let's go. Let's try to, you know, really make a real run at this. Forget about just winning the division next year. Like, go make a real run at trying to take down the Chiefs or the Bengals or the Bills in the playoffs and being one of those teams that can legitimately, you know, compete for a Super Bowl.
Now, here's the thing. I don't think Calvin Ridley, because of how young he was on a contract extension. I think he was, because he was a first-round pick, I think he was on his fifth-year option.
So next year is his last year.
So you could, now, theoretically, this is where it gets tricky, because they already have money tied up in Christian Kirk. $18 million a year, I think, was the number just off the top of my head. So you could next year bring in DeAndre Hopkins and you're only paying Calvin Ridley on that fifth-year option. But if Calvin Ridley goes and balls out, with how much younger Calvin Ridley is compared to DeAndre Hopkins, that's a lot of money then if you are tying up. And I know then Hopkins only has 2 years left on the deal. If you're paying Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins, then if Calvin Ridley balls out, you're going to have to pay all three of them a pretty high price tag for the year after that. So I guess it's one of those good problems to have if you could go down that road and get DeAndre Hopkins, Hickey. And how many times do we say this? The salary cap is just a number. There's so many ways now to kind of like move around and make up these fake years on the contract that are voidable years and push that salary number down the road. There's always a way.
There always is a way, but also, too, I mean, you look, you have 2 years of Trevor Lawrence already, you know, already in the books. Like, he's cheap now.
Go, like, you're right.
Go kind of make your, again, that's part of the reason, you know, strike while the iron's hot. Go get a DeAndre Hopkins while you still can afford to have, you know, let's say two or three highly paid receivers on your team before Trevor Lawrence gets a big deal next offseason, 2 years from now, whenever it may be.
And you see it kind of in Philadelphia, how valuable that rookie contract is, because they went from being in a bad spot coming off a Super Bowl win. I know then the next year they made the playoffs again. The year after that they made the playoffs with them. And Carson Wentz, when everyone realized he wasn't going to be the guy in Philadelphia, they had to go find another quarterback. Not everyone's able to just pick a replacement while your guy is there that you're trying to replace. And at the time, we didn't know that that was necessarily the way, but they were concerned about the health of Carson Wentz. Like, I don't think they drafted him saying Jalen Hurts is going to be the replacement to Carson Wentz. I think they drafted him as a really early insurance policy that turned out to be the best insurance policy in the league. But look at the Eagles, where they now have Hurts still on a rookie deal. He's balling out like the way he is, and they could go out there and trade and pay for an A.J. Brown. They could go on out there and you know, they have Devontae Smith on a rookie contract. You'll sign a Hassan Reddick, who may be the most underrated player in football. You go trade for a Darius Slay. Having Jalen Hurts in that rookie deal is enormous. Enormous right now. And you are right. If you're Jacksonville, yeah, go take advantage of having Trevor Lawrence on the rookie deal. Because eventually, Trevor Lawrence, and I don't know if he's getting Mahomes money, and I know that Mahomes deal is actually advantageous for the Chiefs because of how long it is and everything, but eventually you're going to be looking at Trevor Lawrence as getting 45-something million dollars a year, and it's going to make you have to trim some fat along the rest of the roster. Winning on that rookie deal or getting your team in a good spot when you have your quarterback on the rookie deal, it's so important now when constructing the formation of a roster.
And look at the Bengals. Look, they won't have an issue in the short term because even still, like, where their receivers are cheap, but pretty soon,
you gotta T. Higgins,
Jamar Chase.
Tyler Boyd.
Like, there's going to be talk about trimming the fat. And unfortunately, everyone's going to get paid soon. So which makes these next, you know, few years for Cincinnati even that much more important of trying to capitalize and getting at least one Super Bowl.
And you got to think one of those, Chase is not going to get squeezed out. They're going to have to pay Burrow. They're going to have to pay Jamar Chase. I do think there's going to be a decision. Is it Higgins or Boyd? Now, I think you would prefer Higgins, but Higgins is going to cost you more. So maybe that's going to get kind of taken care of by itself because the market's going to dictate it, but you never know. Maybe T. Higgins will take a few million less to go play with Joe Burrow, but that's another conversation for another day. So that's Jacksonville. The Giants, here's what I'll say about the Giants. They built good culture this year. They made you, for the first time in a while, respect their coach and their general manager. In terms of foundational pieces moving forward, the guy I feel best about is Dexter Lawrence. I think Dexter Lawrence is a stud. I'm going to assume Saquon Barkley is back, but you got to pay him. And Daniel Jones, this is the tricky part you get into. Daniel Jones had a good season with nothing around him. Throwing to James and Hodgins and Slayton, like, those are not number one wide receivers. Most of those guys aren't number two wide receivers in this league. I do think they're going to pay Jones. I think Jones is going to be on a 3 or 4 year deal, which I'm okay with. But we're talking about Dak. We're talking about Kirk Cousins, guys that are good, not great. And look how much money are tied up into those two. I do wonder if a few years from now, you look back at that Jones contract, and even though you have to pay him right now, if you kind of wonder, all right, do you just have a good quarterback? Or if you get the right pieces around Daniel Jones, can he maybe become a great quarterback? The Giants this offseason, they need to fix a lot of holes. Because there is going to be some regression next year, you would think. But you could avoid that aggression if you put Jones around some legit playmakers, which they don't have many on that roster right now.
It's going to be so interesting to see how Joe Shane approaches this. Because with him coming from Buffalo, right? How they built Buffalo was they built a team around the quarterback. And then they got Josh Allen. And Josh Allen was able to kind of work his way into becoming the quarterback he is, in part because the team around him was so good, not the other way around, where they got the quarterback and nothing else around him.
And then eventually got Diggs to go take the next step.
So Joe Shane has been, or has come from a mold where it is, build a team first, then find the quarterback.
Yeah.
And now I'm sure him and Brian Daboll came in not thinking they're going to make the playoffs and go to the second round this year.
They declined the fifth-year option on Jones. They didn't think Jones is going to be back. Now they know Jones is going to be back. They even said it today.
It's going to be fascinating to see, like, you know, the calculus that now goes on of, like I said, you're going to have to figure out how to pay Daniel Jones, what's going to be too much, and now kind of go the opposite of what you did in Buffalo. Like, if you're trying to be Buffalo 2.0 here with the Giants, well, right now with the Giants and what they had, it's going to be kind of tough to do that because, again, if you want to keep Daniel Jones, most of that money, most of the cap, most of the resources will go to the quarterback, and now you have to find shorthanded offensive linemen, and like I said, especially receivers and tight ends to go along with them.
I think in a weird way, the Giants need to learn from the Patriots. And I know Mac Jones was a rookie, and Daniel Jones just completed his fourth year, but Mac Jones and Daniel Jones are both players that no one really knows what their ceilings are, and the Patriots off year one with Mac Jones didn't give him anything in year number two, and he regressed significantly. Now, here's the upside for the Giants. You're not going to have Matt Patricia running your offense. I'm assuming Mike Kafka is not going to get a head coaching job. Maybe I'm wrong on that, and he'll be back next year with Brian Daboll. Even if Kafka goes, you still have Daboll in the building, who was a big part in the development of Josh Allen. But what I mean by this is, don't just go into next year thinking Daniel Jones is going to be able to do the same thing that he did the year before, because there's always signs of regression. And if you do what the Patriots did and not get legit weapons around Daniel Jones, even though Jones this year did a nice job without those legit weapons, I think that's a dangerous formula and you're playing with fire and you'll eventually get burned. Because ultimately in this league, you need the right fit, but talent does make up for a lot of the shortcomings of a roster year in and year out. Okay. Now let's go to the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills have a lot of work to do. The Bills should still win their division next year. The Bills should still be a top three team in the AFC next year. But I think the Bills, this is their most crucial offseason up to date, because you've shown you could be really damn good in this league. You've shown at times you could be great. But now every year until you get the Super Bowl, because of your past success, it's Super Bowl or bust. And the Bills this offseason, they need to get tougher in the trenches, defensive line and offensive line. Without having Von Miller, they had no pass rush. They had no pass rush against the Bengals with three offensive linemen that were out for Cincinnati. You saw how important Von Miller was, because in that win earlier in the year up against Kansas City, he was the one that got off the edge, got to Mahomes to force him to throw that ball, and got picked off by Teron Johnson. That finisher wasn't there because he was hurt, unfortunately. But I really do believe Buffalo needs to get a tough back this offseason, because the formula of having Josh Allen be the entire offense and having him run, you're asking for your quarterback to get hurt. And you're asking your quarterback in a 17-game rigorous season to do too much. They got to change the running back spot in Buffalo. And I don't know if this guy will be available, because they could franchise tag him. But Ryan, wouldn't Josh Jacobs be the perfect running back? And I mean the perfect running back for the Buffalo Bills.
He would. I would even say it goes further than that. You need identity change on offense. You have to become more physical. Like, just not even just in your like thought of how you run the ball, but actually how, you know,
well, that helps
you
with the run
your
game.
Will. But it's like you get
Josh
Jacobs.
Josh Jacobs is the perfect back for that.
But also at the same time, if your offensive line's not blowing in off the ball anyway, Josh Jacobs been running into the backs of linemen at the line of scrimmage, not going anywhere. Like I said, he's going to help because he's that kind of that physical bruiser that Buffalo has not had for a long time, and part of the reason why they haven't been able to establish a run game. But also starts with the five linemen up to in front of Josh Allen and trying to get a push, which is another thing they have struggled with. And that's why it goes back to like a philosophical thing of trying to now, you know, work the run game and not just be basically, you know, a pass happy team or put it all on Josh Allen team. You have to be able to impose your will with some of the Bills up front, especially have not been able to do this year.
And you need to get someone that can hit the quarterback too, because you get Von Miller back, but you're going to need someone to complement Von Miller as well.
Yes, both the trenches need an identity change without a doubt.
Now for the Cowboys, I don't think Dak and McCarthy are going anywhere. You know who would actually make a lot of sense for DeAndre Hopkins? It's the Cowboys. They need another wide receiver there. And I think they'll say goodbye to Zeke this offseason. You're going to need to figure out if you're going to be able to bring back Tony Pollard. And I don't know when he'll be cleared to play, you know, with the whole injury and all that. But you're going to have to get another running back, too. The Cowboys have a lot of work to do. They have a ton of work to do this offseason, and you're building at a point where no one thinks you could really get past the second round. This is a tough, and I mean a tough offseason for the Cowboys, who were so, who in the big spot yesterday, Dak Prescott just once again, in a game that was closer than probably what most people thought, was just extremely disappointing.
It's talent, and it's also just like the intangibles, even like some like the little things of just like fundamentals. Seven penalties again. This has been a very highly penalized team in the 3 years that Mike McCarthy's been there. Which
they're just a stupid football team. Like even the other day, just how does the kick returner not beat the kicker? How does he run right into the kicker? It seems like those things for a team that's good in the big spot, they just do dumb things in Dallas.
And you see in the playoffs when those mistakes are magnified, it's so hard when you're playing great teams. It's so hard to overcome those small mistakes and give great teams second, third opportunities. You can't do it and win games. And again, that's now 2 years in a row, a Mike McCarthy-led playoff Cowboys playoff team. You make mistakes and you can't overcome them.
And the awareness is bad.
Yeah,
you look at last year, the end of game scenario. You look at Dak almost taking that safety yesterday. Whatever that play was at the end of the game, for a team doing double-digit games back-to-back years, they are a stupid football team, and they do stupid things. And ultimately, as long as Jerry Jones is still their owner, I don't expect much to change.
Well, that's really, like, if you want to talk about what needs to change for this team to actually win a Super Bowl.
But it's not. It's a waste of conversation. We do this every year.
But you're, like, that's where, like, if we're talking about actual change.
And don't get me wrong.
That's the answer.
Stephen Jones has a ton of power. Will McClay has a ton of power. But as long as Jerry's there, I don't think much will change. All right, Dan Orlovsky will join us next. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
And you can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I learned a lot of things this weekend. One of those things that I learned, well, maybe not this weekend, but it was more throughout last week, is that Marco Belletti has a heart. And Marco Belletti is a regular human being like everyone else. Because Marco Belletti, who I kind of really do appreciate around here, and I think a lot of people look up to, and I think sometimes Marco kind of gets this view of him, or people look at Marco as like this guy that when you're walking in the door the first time, don't talk to. He's a little grumpy. He can be rough around the edges. Sometimes I think people forget that Marco is just a good guy, and he's like all of us. So the reason I say that is last week, and Marco is usually negative about his teams, doesn't ever believe in his teams. But there was a strong confidence from Marco on Monday about his Giants being the Eagles. And then as the week progressed, that 50% confidence went to 60, 65, went to 70, 75, went to 80, and then it went to 100. And Marco, I do feel for you on this day because I know it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough when you thought your team was going to win and then they just get embarrassed like that.
Mistakes were made.
Yeah, many mistakes. I think you should be the strength and conditioning coach of the Giants.
Look, I mean, it is what it is. They got boat raced from the opening kick. The only good part about the whole thing was simply after a game's over, any game, there's always, if they would have made this play. If they would have made
nothing
that play.
From this one.
There's nothing. That game was over 5 minutes into it, and you knew it right from the start. I did preface again, I was completely wrong. I thought the Eagles would play a C-minus game, the Giants would play an A-plus game, and they'd be able to squeak it out. I never for a second thought Jalen Hurts was healthy and that the Eagles would play a solid game. They weren't great. Don't get me wrong. The Eagles have another level than that. They're better than that. I just thought that they would play poorly.
Well, it was
they played
as if
well.
They went into halftime with a 28-0 lead. They knew, okay, it doesn't, like, we don't have to go on in the
But even
half.
That, they played well. They have another level to that. Look, if they play that well the rest of the way, they can win the whole thing. Playing that well against the Giants, no matter what level the Giants played, they can't match that. They also played an F game. So you get a B game from the Eagles with an F from the Giants, and you get slop that we got Saturday night.
Now, I will say this. I thought Hickey was just disgraceful in the newsroom. I saw something. I don't know if Hickey meant it this way, but he saw you. He was like, oh, Marco, how are you? Sorry. That did not seem like a very genuine that he was looking after you. I think Hickey has been someone that has just been absolutely destroyed on the airwaves here, has been beaten down, torn down for some of his takes. I think he kind of, in a sick way, enjoyed that it was someone other than him.
That's fine. See, I've always said, you take the accountability, you take the responsibility. I don't care. I'm good either way. Whether he was being genuine, whether he was being an ass clown, I'm cool either way. I said what I said. I stood by it. I meant it. I take accountability. I'm big on that. Take accountability and responsibility for your actions.
Go ahead, Ryan.
You don't really think that was genuine?
I wasn't really thinking anything of it. I hear you, and I appreciate the, I guess, the,
I don't
the
even think
I'm
you
sorry.
Said hello back. I think that's how annoyed you
no,
were.
No, I said, no, it wasn't that. I said hello back. when he first came by, but I
get
mean,
away
like,
from me.
The idea of, like, you know, I'm sorry, like, I appreciate
I
it,
feel
but like,
bad. I've been there.
But, like, what are we doing?
Like, it just sucks. As someone who has many times, unfortunately, see my teams in a similar spot,
but
have a similar
you,
result as you, as someone who, again, shares that, knows what that feeling's like, I was just sending
Marco,
my sympathies
Marco,
to you, that's all.
I'm 100% with you. When you lose a game, I hate when someone comes up to you that doesn't root for your team and is like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
There's two things. One.
Why?
Let's not make it seem like there was a death in the family. That's first off. The other part of it is, like, I'm not on the team. So, like, yeah, and then on top of it, like, you know, I don't know, expressing sorry, like, is it going to help me, like, in any way? Like,
do you
want to
dance in your grave then, next time?
Hey, if you want to, but, like, I'm cool with nothing. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like
just going to pretend the game didn't happen.
Look, maybe you just came
let's
up with
this
the
way.
Person and just say, hello, how are you?
Hickey, after the game is over and a brutal Colt loss, anything I'm going to say to you make you feel better?
No.
So then what are we doing? So if you actually know, then what the hell are we doing?
Like, but it's just more common courtesy. Like,
is it?
Of, hey,
nah.
Marco,
is it?
I know you're
douche.
Hurting.
Is it?
I know on Saturday, like, I rarely know what you do outside of work. I rarely know how you feel in general. I know for a fact at probably starting at 8:45 p.m. Eastern, you were hurting for the next 2 or 3 hours. So I know as a human being, you are in pain. So all I want to do today, there's nothing I could do to make up for it. Just say, hey, I'm sorry. Basically, right. I've been there. I get it. It sucks. I'm with you. That's all.
All right.
I'm not trying
again,
to make you feel better.
I go
I'm
back
saying,
to the same concept.
I can sympathize.
Would you want to hear this after your team lost?
No.
Then what do
and
we
And also, I think Marco is the complete opposite of someone that ever needs a pep talk. And like a.
I'm not giving a pep talk. It's just like, I feel like it's honestly worse if you ignore the elephant in the room. We know the elephant in the room.
What? Yeah, we all know what happened.
But exactly.
But I mean,
so like just to ignore it and pretend like, oh, what games? There's a game on Saturday. I have no idea what you're talking about. I think that makes it, that's cowardly.
It is
that's
the Zach Gelb show on CBS Sports Radio. Like, look at Hickey. He just lives on this little island. He needs to check on everyone here for their checks and balances because his team sucks. So he has to make sure that everyone else's teams that also sucked at a big spot needs to feel good about themselves. Now, I do agree with you, and I know we got to take a break. If your team's going to lose, no one ever wants to see your team lose. But it's just better to realize, okay, they were completely the better team than to play that what-if game.
Yeah, I mean, again, it makes it feel a little bit better in the 3 hours afterwards where you're not.
On.
Yeah, you're just not, oh, man, if they're going to. Like, it was nothing to do.
The game ended, you didn't sit on the couch for 9 hours.
No, I mean, what do you stare at the TV? Like, you knew. This game was over 5 minutes in. At 14-0, the Giants couldn't possibly come back no matter what they did. Like, there was nothing. There's nothing there. So you're just watching it. The only thing that sucks is that you're watching 3.5 hours worth of, you know,
of
getting
funeral.
Stabbed in the eye.
Yeah.
Like, you just, you know, like, who the hell wants to sit through that? But you got to sit through it.
We'll get to the closing bell next.
Goalie gummies get you so close to your goals, you can actually taste them. The trick? Simply start with bite-sized steps, like Goalie's apple cider vinegar gummies with added B vitamins for daily health, or Goalie ashwagandha gummies to help you relax, restore, and unwind. Mmm, tastes like wellness just got a whole lot better. And when goals taste this good, it's easy to achieve them. Goalie, taste your goals. Learn more at goalie.com today.